What's up, everybody, and welcome to the weekly edition of ESG Now, where we cover how the environment, our society, and corporate governance affects and are affected by our economy. I'm your host, Mike DiSebato, and today we have two stories for you. First, we are going to talk about what the failed union vote at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama means for the global labor movement, and then we discuss the move in France to ban short-haul domestic plane flights. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Stay tuned. The COVID-19 pandemic has been devastating in innumerable ways, many of which are unlikely to be seen or understood until years after this has all subsided. But one company above all else has flourished during this time, Amazon. Due to the demand for non-contact shopping and the closing of many retail stores due to the pandemic, Amazon has flourished more than ever before. I need to list some numbers here to put Amazon's growth during 2020 into perspective, since it's kind of hard to conceptualize how big it's gotten. Amazon added over 400,000 workers, that's around 30,000 per day, and it's not including its delivery staff that drive the trucks because they're contractors, which has given the company over 1 million workers globally. That's still behind Walmart's 2.3 million workers globally, but Amazon's hiring surge is the largest in the history of corporations. It increased its warehouse square footage by 50% in 2020, and for comparison, it increased its square footage by only 15% in 2019, and its stock price went up 73% from January 1st to December 31st, 2020. And then after all this, Jeff Bezos transitioned to the role of executive chair after stepping down from his CEO position in 2021. The company's growth has meant it is one of the most important employers in the world, and so its relationship with its employees has reverberations throughout the global economy. Recently, that relationship was put to the test in the southern U.S. state of Alabama, where Amazon and its warehouse workers in Bessemer, Alabama, were locked in a contentious battle over whether the warehouse would be unionized. After a long vote count, the workers voted decisively against the union on Friday, April 9th. Of the 6,000-person warehouse, 738 voted for the union, and 1,798 voted against the union. So while it was still the farthest a union vote has gotten at Amazon, it didn't go the way the union organizers might have hoped. But the thing is, with Amazon's business model, which they tried to provide packages to the customer's door within the day or the next day, is that to do this, they have to have facilities in a large number of labor markets. So actually, a large part of Amazon's workforce is already unionized. It's just its European workforce, not its American one. But even in those markets, Amazon has been unwilling to sit down with workers and negotiate pay and conditions. So their unionized workers in Europe just go on strike when they want changes made. Now, what does this quarrelsome relationship Amazon had with labor mean? To answer that, I called up Andrew Young, who covers labor in the tech market for us, and asked him first to put our stance on unions into context.
You know, for our research, of course, we've reviewed the academic literature, and you know, there's a vast amount of literature to do with unions, some of which suggests that a union can positively contribute to a company, and some of which suggests that a union can negatively contribute to a company. You know, what we can conclude from that is that the presence of a union is not necessarily a determinant of company productivity and company performance. However, what we can understand from the literature was that the relationship with union can have with unions can have a significant impact on productivity. So not the fact that there is a union, but the company's relationship to its unions or to organized labor. So that's why we take a neutral stance, but we do care about the relationship that the company forms with its unions. So a combative relationship, an explicitly anti-union stance, can have impacts on worker motivation, on worker productivity, and then also on a company's ability to hire and retain workers, as we've seen in Amazon in the US, because these workers might not see a future with that company. While we take a neutral stance, you know, a union also does suggest that basic rights and basic protections are in place for workers. So that can be basic job securities, But it can also be that the company is contributing to a worker's professional development. So they are being trained, they are being brought along for the ride, rather than being looked to be replaced by robots.
Okay, so we take a neutral stance on the union with caveats. The automation point that Andrew made, though, it's one that has been made often. It's no secret that Amazon and other companies like it are working to automate their operations because, you know, more robots mean more efficiency. But we are in this weird moment where companies are like half automated because robotics isn't at the point where they can take over everything. For example, at Amazon warehouses, there are these large shelves with all the goodies that need to be shipped on them. And robots have been introduced that move large shelves from the storage areas to the area where the items are going to be packaged and shipped. But robots cannot yet grab items of different shapes and sizes. So Amazon still needs humans, they call them pickers, to select the right box for shipment. Yet if you are a company that expects to eventually transition all your warehouse jobs to robots, you would be setting up systems that are more amenable to the robotics, not to humans. And for example, robots don't need camaraderie yet. So the human pickers are in these kind of isolated areas, just doing repetitive tasks for around 10 hours a day. And it used to be that maybe two or three pickers were working together and they were talking and, you know, kind of enjoying themselves. But this is not happening during COVID because of social distancing rules. So you have very isolated pods of one person just picking up a box and putting it somewhere else. And it might be why Amazon's turnover rate during the pandemic has been at least double the average for retail and warehousing industries. Amazon has had an employee turnover rate for its full and part-time Amazon and Whole Foods employees of 111% between March 1st and September 19th of 2020, according to a Seattle Times analysis. The warehousing industry, as the Seattle Times defines it, had a turnover rate of just 33% during the same period. And now, usually, such a high turnover rate would signal a risk at the company because companies kind of want low turnover. You want your employees to have industry experience. But Amazon and other tech companies like Uber and Lyft are changing that paradigm because there are more industries like them with higher turnover and strong company performance. Now, there is a debate to be had about what this does to our economic system as a whole, but keeping with Amazon, this sort of turnover rate raises an important but bleak question. Does Amazon care if its warehouse worker turnover is 100%?
This is the maybe the debate within the technology industry. Because on one hand, you have internationally recognized worker rights and protections that companies should regard. But on the other hand, you have the philosophy of not only Amazon, but let's say generally within the technology space, that they would like to react quickly to new technologies, to create new business models, to hire and to fire quickly so that they can pursue these new opportunities as best as possible. So they feel that by dragging along a union, which is always looking to negotiate, would hamper their progression in that way. So I don't think they particularly care that the workers turn over. They're there to do a job. And it's you know, you can see this across the tech sector where gig work is more and more common. You know, gig work from deliveries at Amazon to content moderation at Facebook to even software coding. You know, so anything that's non-strategic can sort of be outsourced and thus enable the company to remain as lean and nimble as possible.
That might be one of the reasons why the union organizers thought they had a chance at the Alabama plant, or it might have been due to the demands for Amazon products during the pandemic, that the union organizers thought any slowdown would be detrimental for Amazon. Regardless, the workers rejected the union by a lot, though the reasons for that rejection are kind of still into debate. Still, the rejection got me wondering if we could find a data point that could be used to compare two similar companies, one that had a highly unionized workforce and another that did not. And we actually collect data on a metric that could be quite useful. We collect data on on what's called labor controversies. The problem is, though, is we can't look at Amazon and another competitor because it's difficult to do that with a company like Amazon because it doesn't really have an easy company to compare it with. But what about companies that are both reliant on and in competition with Amazon? Companies like UPS or FedEx. And actually, UPS and FedEx are excellent test cases because UPS has a workforce that's 75% unionized, while FedEx only has a workforce that is 5% unionized. The problem is that Andrew does not cover FedEx or UPS. So I called up my colleague who does, Umar Ashfaq, and I asked him to tell me about the labor controversies that we collect for these two companies and where the differences in them may lie, if there are any differences.
So on the face of it, there are no apparent differences between the controversies tracked to labor management practices of FedEx or UPS. Both companies have around about equal number of controversies when it comes to labor management practices. However, a deeper look does reveal some differences. And an important thing to keep in mind here is that UPS has a more than double size of workforce when it comes to FedEx. So we normalize the number of controversies there are. And we also looked at only controversies that are tagged as moderate or severe. And based on that, it turns out that UPS has a much better record in terms of normalized controversies per capita.
So can we say that there's a causation between high rates of unionization and low labor controversies? No, we cannot. But it's still an interesting correlation to note that UPS has a high rate of unionization and has lower controversies than FedEx. What the future holds for how Amazon and other companies like it will operate is kind of impossible, obviously, to predict. But in the US, the political winds look like they're starting to get a bit harsher for Amazon and other big tech companies. For example, in the US, there is a woman named Lina Khan that wrote a well-regarded piece while in law school that argued Amazon was a monopoly and its actions were having the same sort of economic distortion that comes with a monopoly. And the Biden administration announced on March 22nd that it intended to nominate Lina Khan for the commissioner of the Federal Trade Commission. So it'll be interesting to see what the next 4 years hold. So I kept Umar on the phone after I called him about FedEx and UPS because he covers another industry that is seeing some interesting moves made in the name of carbon emission reductions. France is moving to ban short-haul domestic flights where a train alternative exists. The measure basically says that if you take a train there in under 2.5 hours, then the route will be effectively banned. Connecting flights will not be affected, however. So here's what Umar had to say on the carbon reduction measure.
So there has been a lot of alarmist reporting on this this ban. So first of all, I would like to clarify that it hasn't been. This is a bill which has been passed in the National Assembly, but it still requires two more steps of passing in the Senate as well as the lower house before it is enacted as law. So at this point in time, as we speak, this has not been enforced yet. So we did a deeper analysis of the routes that are going to be affected. And these are just five routes originating from Paris onto several different smaller cities in of France that are going to be affected. And these five routes are only a very small percentage of the total 120 odd routes that Air France operates within France domestically. So if you do a little bit, if you dig a little bit deeper into this, domestic France travel for Air France KLM is only 7% of its total passenger revenue. And if you were to even take out the impact of this, of these five routes, it's going to, the ultimate impact is expected to be minimal.
So according to the International Energy Association, CO2 emissions from aviation have risen rapidly over the past two decades, as I'm sure, Umar, you can imagine. And it reached nearly 1 gigaton in 2019, or about 2.8% of global CO2 emissions. From fossil fuel combustion. So the total environmental emissions from a single plane ride from, say, London to Madrid is 265 kilograms of CO2 emitted, while a train is just 43 kilograms for the same distance. And so the airline is saying that they want to reduce its emissions by using hydrogen fuels or one day use all electric engines. But Umar, is banning flights really the only way forward for the industry? Do you think we're going to see more of this happening?
I don't think this is the only way to do it. And I, cutting routes altogether, I don't think is a solution. Perhaps a more prudent solution would be to continue taxation or increase taxation, impose perhaps a carbon tax or some sort of an additional tax for travel, which is short routes. And there are alternatives available as well. Another thing to look at is that this is not the first time something like this has been enacted. France is not the first European country to impose a taxation or a cut down of sorts on short-haul aviation travel. Last year, Austria's government had also enacted a tax on all flights which were less than 350 kilometers in length. And it has also banned all domestic flights that could be replaced by a 3-hour train ride. There was also discussion within France to have a much more stricter version of this to be impacted. And that was for any two areas which were connected by a 4-hour or less of a train ride, then those were to be impacted. But this is considered to be a watered down version of this.
Okay, so maybe it won't be adopted widely, but perhaps it's a signal to the airline industry that unless it starts really cutting emissions, it might see governments attempting to maybe ban or shorten routes where other alternatives are available. And that's it for the week. I wanted to thank Andrew and Umar for talking to me about this week's news with an ESG twist. And I wanted to thank you so much for listening. I always appreciate it. Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts because I enjoy reading them. And subscribe as well. Stay safe and have a great rest of the week.
The MSCI ESG Research podcast is provided by MSCI Inc.'s subsidiary, MSCI ESG Research LLC, a registered investment advisor under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. And this recording and data mentioned herein has not been submitted to nor received approval from the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any other regulatory body. The analysis discussed should not be taken as an indication or guarantee of any future performance, analysis, forecast, or prediction. The information contained in this recording is not for reproduction in whole or in part without prior written permission from MSCI ESG Research. None of the discussion or analysis put forth in this recording constitutes an offer to buy or sell or a promotion or recommendation of any security, financial instrument, or product or trading strategy. Further, none of the information is intended to constitute investment advice or recommendation to make or refrain from making any kind of investment decision and may not be relied on as such. The information provided here is as is, and the user of the information assumes the entire risk of any use it may make or permit to be made of the information. Thank you.